Hi, everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. How is everybody today? I'm feeling pretty good. We are still here in California, working on a production of The Music Man. We open on Thursday, which is kind of exciting. And I'm looking forward to that because that means my workload with the production will drop a little bit. I am conducting the show, but once the show is up, the stress is off. We can just play music and have fun. So I'm looking forward to that. And then in a couple of weeks, we go home. Home. I'm really looking forward to going home. I wanted to talk about something different today, but it's related to food. It's related to health. I wanted to talk about health insurance. You may remember, I've mentioned it maybe way too many times. I was diagnosed with advanced ovarian cancer back in 2006, and for 15 months until the end of December in 2007, I had a variety of treatments until I was healed. And fortunately, today, 11 years later, I'm thriving and cancer-free. But during that time period, I had an insurance plan. It looked on paper to be a very good plan. I had point of service, which meant I had a plan for the network, but I was also able to go out of network with some restrictions, and I was very well aware of my out-of-pocket limits and the maximum limits that the insurance company would pay. And I was ready for that when I went out of network for some doctors. But what happened was there were about 20 claims during that 15-month period that the insurance company either refused to pay or wouldn't pay adequately, in my opinion, and I owed over $100,000. And then during that, the next 3 years, it took 3 years, but I fought every one of those 20 claims. Yes, I did. And I didn't have to pay any of it. So what I want to go over in the next hour or so is talk about how to navigate insurance claims due to health problems. And, you know, I thought when Obamacare, the Affordable Health Act, was passed, I thought that this knowledge that I had wouldn't be useful anymore. Everyone would have insurance. We'd all be covered. And we could all live happily ever after. Well, we all know that that's not true, right? And a lot of what I learned 10, 11 years ago is very useful today. And I'll tell you why later, because I just had an experience. And so now I'm kind of going through the process again. And I want to share with you a lot of information because I think it's useful to know. Okay, so you have health insurance. And if you don't, that's a whole nother problem. But if you do have health insurance, there's so much that you need to know. First of all, how many of us have time or knowledge to read the fine print? So we sign up for a plan, and some point later, we get a book in the mail, a member handbook, or sometimes you can download it right away as a PDF from a website, and you need to read it. But even if you read it, there's a lot of information that is very ambiguous, as I learned with my own experience. So let me tell you some of those things. First of all, if you're going to have a particular procedure that is considered out of the ordinary, most plans will tell you what they cover right up front. For example, an annual exam is often covered. For women, an annual gynecological exam is covered. There are certain things that are covered for children. And there's usually a handy table that tells you in one page what you're covered for and by what percentage and what deductible you have. And you're also told, and there are two things you need to know, what your deductible is and what your maximum out-of-pocket is. And this is an interesting thing. So the insurance company, let's say you're billed like $100 for a procedure, and the insurance company decides that that procedure is only worth $60. Now, how they come up with those numbers, we'll get into that later. But if they decide that they're only covering $60, sometimes they have an arrangement in network with a hospital or a doctor, and they both agree that even though the bill comes to $100, they agree that $60 is okay and they pay it and everything's fine. But if they don't have an agreement and your bill is $100 and your insurance company only pays $60, then you have to look at what your plan says, because some plans will pay 100% of what the insurance company agrees is the appropriate price, which would be $60. Or maybe they'll only pay 80% of what they think is the appropriate price. So you could be billed $100. And if the insurance company thinks it's only worth $60 and they'll only pay 80% of $60, that means they're only paying $48. And if you don't have a network agreement between your doctor and the plan, that means you're going to owe $52. You got that? Now, maximum out-of-pocket, let's say you have a maximum out-of-pocket cost of $5,000. So if you unfortunately have some serious health issues and you've got a lot of bills coming in, your insurance will keep track of all your co-pays and everything you're paying. And when you pay over $5,000, when you hit $5,000, they pay the rest. But again, there's a caveat. They put all that other stuff into play, how much they consider the procedure is worth, and how much you've paid, and how much they've paid. So if they feel a procedure isn't worth as much as being billed, even if you've reached your $5,000 limit, they are not going to pay more than what they think the procedure is worth. And this is crazy. Now, the next thing is, when you're getting a procedure done, it depends on your plan, of course. Most plans, if it's something that's a little out of the ordinary, for example, a lot of plans for women will cover mammograms. I've never had a mammogram. I don't recommend them. I don't ever plan on having one, but a lot of plans cover them. But there are other procedures that they may not cover automatically, and you'll need to get an authorization for that, which is challenging because if you have something that's going on that's a crisis and time is of the essence, getting an authorization for a procedure can be dicey. But let's say you have time, you get the authorization, you want to make sure you get it in writing and you have an authorization number. You don't want to get an authorization over the phone without a number and without a guarantee that they will be sending you a document. And I also recommend always taking notes with the date, the time of day, and the name of the person that you've spoken with at your insurance company, and also all medical providers. Take notes, copious notes. You may need them. I hope you never do, but it really comes in handy. So let's say you do have an authorization and then the procedure comes through. Well, you know, it's not like you go to a store and they're selling apples for $4.99 for a 3-pound bag. The prices are like never advertised. And the insurance company doesn't even tell you what they consider acceptable. So even if you have an authorization, you still don't know what it's going to cost you. And I remember back in the day when I was considering going out of network, Memorial Sloan Kettering was not in my plan, and I went to them for a consultation. I did not end up using them. I don't really care for Memorial Sloan Kettering. I know many people like them. They are considered the premier cancer hospital in the country, I believe, and they are in New York. But I didn't like them very much. I think they're getting better, but still, it's a long story, but I did not have good feeling for them. Anyway, I went and had my consultation with the oncologist, and then I asked the oncologist what it was going to cost me, and he kind of bristled a little bit because he just cared about oncology and cancer treatments. He didn't want to talk about the administration portion. And frankly, you know, I don't blame him. The administration portion with our medical care today is really obscene. So he sent me to the department where they handle billing. And we waited a long time. And finally, when we saw the representative and wanted to get a feeling for what the cost would be, she basically told us she couldn't tell us because she didn't know exactly what the care was going to be. And this is what you get. You get this runaround because they can't commit to what they're going to do to you until they open you up or until they start treating you. And I think that they can give you an estimate, or they can give you what ifs and give you ballpark figures. But I wasn't given that. And that's one of the problems. So you try and get as much information as you can ahead of time, but you'll meet up with a lot of resistance. Now, if you have an in-network plan and a lot of things are covered, things are a lot simpler, especially if you stay in-network. The challenge is when you have a problem and you want to see a specialist that's out-of-network, and your out-of-network plan may have limitations, or you don't have an out-of-network plan. Okay, so let's say you have an authorization, you're approved, you go in. The next thing is, after you're having a procedure, is that it takes a long time for the bills to come in. And this is something that I never understood. You know, you're way past the procedure, you're healing, or maybe you're moving on to some other treatments. Some of the bills that I received for my cancer treatment came over a year later. What was going on? Well, some of the things that were going on was that a bill would be sent from the medical provider, either the doctor or the hospital, to the insurance company. And the insurance company might throw the claim back for different reasons, that they didn't receive an operations report or something was missing, one thing or another. And paperwork goes back and forth between the medical provider and the insurance company. And then finally, it's either paid or it isn't paid, or it's paid insufficiently, and then you get a bill. And it can be years later. What is this? And some of those bills can be significant. And as I was saying, I had over $100,000 owed. It's really fascinating because it's not just the insurance company that is a problem. So if you have some bills that are due, I recommend a number of things. First, you want to make sure the bill is correct. And that's not necessarily an easy thing to do. I found that I had a number of repeat procedures. For example, I had a port put under my skin. It's a gross little unit that is supposed to ease up getting infusions of chemotherapy when they're putting needles into your veins to get the chemo in. And so I had this hard metal device under my skin, and I had surgery to put that in twice, because I had one put in and then I had it taken out and then I had it put in. And I noticed that the procedure was done in the same hospital twice, and the amount my insurance company would pay for the procedure was different each time. And it took a couple of years to get this figured out. It turns out that it wasn't the insurance company this time that was entirely wrong. Part of the problem was that the hospital billed differently each time. The first time they bundled all of the procedures that they did. So you may be aware of this, but there are codes for everything. There's even a code for using a Band-Aid. Now, for some reason, the billing department at the hospital decided to bundle all the codes together when they were billing the hospital, and the hospital paid some kind of bundled rate. And then the second time, they charged individual codes, and apparently one of the codes wasn't correct, and it wasn't a code that was included on the authorization, and the insurance company wouldn't pay it. And it took a long time talking to the medical provider, the nurses, the insurance company, looking over my bills to figure out the problem. And I finally did. And the problem was the hospital was billing incorrectly. But then there was another part of the problem. And that is, when the insurance company and the medical provider have an agreement, for example, if they're in a network, the agreement sometimes is that the insurance company will pay a certain percentage of what the billed procedure is. They have these terms, usual and customary charges or rates, terms like that, misleading, kind of ambiguous things. And I determined that there was a number of 65%. That if the hospital was in the network, the insurance would pay them 65% of the billed rate, and everybody was happy. So when I had this procedure at an out-of-network hospital, the insurance paid them 65% of the billed amount the first time, and the hospital accepted it. The second time, the hospital didn't accept 65%. They wanted the full 100%. And when I would go back and forth and talk to them, they would say, yeah, we're not in network, so we want the full payment. We're not accepting a network fee. But then I had to go back and remind them that there was precedent because they had already accepted 65% before. So why wouldn't they do it the second time? And then ultimately they agreed. There's so much flexibility in what people will accept. So here's another one. Again, not the insurance company this time, but the provider. I had a surgery. I had three major surgeries. And one of them was at Mount Sinai Hospital. And I loved the hospital. I was treated very well there. And they healed me. So I love them. And my surgeon, I had two. And one was charging $3,000 for his procedure, and the other surgeon, the bill came to over $20,000. They were both there for the same amount of time, and it was like a 2-3 hour surgery, and he was billing $20,000, and my insurance company paid like $1,200. And I'm looking at it, oh my goodness, I owe like $18,000. What? And when I emailed my surgeon and said this is what was going on, I asked him, can you tell me or why your fee is justified at $20,000 so that I can write an appeal? And he wrote back and said, don't worry about it. I'll just write it off. And he explained that he wasn't doing the billing. He was on salary. It didn't affect him, and that there was some sort of scale, apparently. And I guess some people who can afford it pay it, and then others, they just erase it? I don't know. All I know is they accepted the $1,200 payment from my insurance company, and that was it. It was gone. My point is, there's a lot of flexibility. You should question everything. Check everything, see if everything makes sense. And there's always leeway, there's always wiggle room to get these fees adjusted. There was another story where I was having a colonoscopy, and I had never had a colonoscopy before. My surgeon, who was an out-of-network surgeon, recommended that I see this guy. It was his buddy and somebody he worked with, and I didn't think twice about it. I was going to the guy he recommended. Turns out he was out of network. And I think I had already reached my out of network maximum. So I knew it wasn't going to cost me more because I had already paid my maximum. And I went to this doctor who did the colonoscopy. He had a anesthesiologist there who put me out. It was a lovely experience. I woke up. I was comfortable. I wasn't disoriented. It all went very well. The colonoscopy was clean. I was very happy. And then, like, I don't know, 6 months, a year later, I get this bill. And it took a while to figure it out. But my insurance company only had a certain amount that they would pay for a colonoscopy. It was less than what the doctor charged. And they paid the doctor, and the doctor was billing me for the rest. But in addition, the anesthesiologist billed separately, and that wasn't covered at all. Did I know that the doctor doing the colonoscopy would bill separately from the anesthesiologist? No. And did I know there was only going to be a small portion? And there was just so many little things. And then when I started to read the fine print, after the fact, I learned that the insurance company didn't approve certain kinds of anesthesia. And it got really crazy where I kept going back and forth with the insurance company and telling them what I'm supposed to be awake when I have this procedure. I'm supposed to experience pain. And then they came back and said that they base all of this on some codes that weren't in my handbook, codes that didn't make any sense. I had to go on the internet and research. And then I found out what each of the codes meant. And that made it sound like they weren't approving anesthesia for my procedure, which was really crazy. Okay, it gets even crazier. I was going back and forth with the anesthesiologist and her billing person, and I think she was billing like $1,800 for her procedure. And then they told me they would accept $500 from me. And I'm trying to get it from my insurance company. Well, when my insurance company found out that the anesthesiologist would accept $500 instead of $1,800, they paid her $500. And that was the end of that. So they try to get whatever you can from you. It's crazy, isn't it? So the first thing I recommend is to take care of yourself. Stay as healthy as you can. That means eating nutrient-dense, nutritionally excellent plant foods and doing the best you can to stay well, because healthcare today is, there's just so many hoops you have to jump through and you never know when you've got a serious thing going on. I have so many stories. I had many, many blood tests, and the lab that was billing me for the blood procedures, there was an in-network price, there was an out-of-network price, and a couple times they charged me out-of-network. It was really insignificant. It was something like $15 versus $5. But when I started looking at it, I was asking myself, why are they charging me $15 instead of $5? And again, I had months of phone calls back and forth just on principle. I wanted it fixed, and it took forever, but I did. I got it fixed, and that made me feel good. The thing is, there are so many mistakes, and the key is to be patient, to be a patient, and always be calm until you're not getting anywhere. I found that I would always be calm and respectful and talk to the representative, not blame them for the bureaucracy and the regulations. But then if I felt like I wasn't getting anywhere, I would get either a little more firm or a little more emotional, because it's very upsetting when you have a lot of bills to pay and you're just trying to survive. I get that. It's tough. So another one, this was the craziest of all. I went to the Block Center outside of Chicago for chemotherapy. And I always call the Block Center the Club Med of chemotherapy. I actually have only good memories going there. I would have a massage. I would bring a friend or a family member with me for my chemo treatments, and I had some fatigue. I had some sensations in my belly, but I never vomited and I never had a bad experience. I went out to eat afterwards. I was always hungry. I gained weight on chemotherapy. I didn't lose weight. And I recommend the Block Center to many people. Now, I was getting bills from them, and these bills were overwhelming. They were pages and pages long. Line items for everything, like I said, every Band-Aid, every injection, every vitamin, everything had a code and a line item, and I would get pages of bills. And they were telling me, don't worry, we're working this out with your insurance company. And I had this book, this stack of invoices from them. Years later, the billing person at the Block Center finally called me and said, I give up. I can't get payment from your insurance company. And that's when I kicked in. Do you know what I did? Nobody else would do this. But maybe you would consider it if you're in any kind of situation like this. I manually typed into an Excel spreadsheet every invoice, every line item, every code for every procedure, what was billed, what was paid, what was owed. And then I did some analyses, and I discovered a number of very telling things. My insurance company was not paying the same amount for the same code. Sometimes they might pay like $10, and sometimes they may pay like $1,000. It was crazy. And it was very difficult communicating this to them. I sent them tables, I sent them graphs, I sent them all kinds of things, pointing out the wide discrepancy in how they chose to pay. Yeah, this can happen. It happened to me. It can happen to anybody. And I finally, after years of fighting, got my insurance company to settle with the Block Center. This is crazy, isn't it? But this really happens. And I kept thinking during all of this, what do people do who don't have the time, who don't have the patience, who don't have the skill set to do this kind of research or kind of analysis to figure out who's wrong and who's right? This really needs to change at some point. So I'm trying to give you the tips and tools you need if you ever need them or know someone who needs them. This program might be helpful for them. Okay, more. Do you want more? So here are some things. When you're appealing a claim, when you're fighting a claim, your insurance company has procedures, forms to fill out. You write a letter. You say, I don't agree with your decision. And you get a response back. And usually right away they say, well, sorry, we're right and you're wrong. And then you send them another letter and say, well, here's why the insurance company's wrong and I'm right. And you go back and forth. A lot of medical providers and hospitals, when your bill is outstanding for a certain amount of time, they'll send it to collections. And I didn't want my credit rating to go bad. So when I would get a notice saying that a certain claim was going to collections, I would call the medical provider and plead with them and say, please, this is an appeal. I don't want anything going to collections, destroying my credit rating, please hold off. And they will. If you send them a copy of the appeal, they have reason to stall. And this would go on and on and on. And I had one of them was really long with a claim with Mount Sinai Hospital. And the woman I dealt with, she was so sweet. And she really felt my pain. And she would tell me what she had to do, what was part of her job requirement, how she didn't want to do what some of the things she had to do, but she had to. And I kept trying to stall on sending my claim amount to collections. So that's one thing you can do, appeal and stall. I finally, for that particular one with Mount Sinai, that was especially crazy. But it was another case where I discovered, again, this was a different hospital this time. When I talked about the insurance company having an agreement paying 65%, I remembered the 65% arrangement with another hospital when I was dealing with the Mount Sinai Hospital. And then I determined they had settled on the same thing where Mount Sinai had accepted 65% from my insurance company on three occasions. But on another occasion, they weren't accepting it, and that's what they were billing me for. And while I was stalling and stalling to get my insurance company to pay more, I finally realized, wait, they accepted 65% before. Why aren't they accepting it now? And it took a lot of back and forth, but finally they agreed. Now, there are some other things that you can do which are very helpful. Now, I had a particularly bad insurance company, and they are out of business today. They are out of business because they had some fraudulent practices, and they couldn't survive. But there are plenty of other insurance companies, and some are better than others. And I think they all try and get away with stuff. You know, profit, bottom line, is what they go by. So in New York, for example, we have the ability to file a complaint with the New York State government. And I don't know how it is with other states. But if you're having an issue with your insurance company where they're not paying what you think they should pay, you should definitely Google, do a search, and find out the state department that manages health insurance and financial services. For example, in New York, we have the Department of Financial Services. Their website is dfs.ny.gov, Department of Financial Services. And you can file a complaint against any business, and they have a special category for health insurance. The department had a different name 10 years ago when I was going through my treatment, but when I discovered them, it changed everything. It changed everything. I found that my insurance company was ignoring my claims. They were ignoring my appeals. I would email them. I would fax them. I would mail them. And I wasn't hearing back from them. They just were ignoring them and not paying them. And then I discovered this state government service where I could submit a claim. And I started to copy them on all of my claims and all of my appeals. And when that happened, I started getting answers. Isn't that interesting? So if you can find a third-party service, state government service, I recommend copying them on claims that you're not getting satisfactory response on. And you should get some better feedback. That really came in handy. And then I also had a last resort. So as I mentioned, I had 20 claims that were outstanding, totaling over $100,000. And one by one, I got them all resolved. Some of them my insurance company paid. Some of them we found were mistakes, either on the insurance side or on the medical provider side. There were so many different, each case seemed to be unique. And then I was down to one, and it was about $7,000. And I decided I was out of ideas, and I went to small claims court. In New York, at the time, I think the limit was $5,000. So I figured I would try and get $5,000. There's a couple of things you need to know about small claims, and I'm sure they're different in every state. In New York, we have a website for businesses, and you can find out the address to send a notice to serve the company that you want to invite to court. The funny thing was, the company that I was dealing with, the insurance company I was dealing with, they hadn't paid their annual fees to be in business here in New York. So that when I discovered that, when I found out the address to serve, and it turned out, I think the address that they had listed on the New York business website was out of date. So I was sending a notice for them to come to small claims court, and it wasn't going to the right address because they didn't have the right address officially noted. Anyway, I showed up in small claims and I was nervous. And I had my whole story and all my documentation. And I finally sat down with a mediator and explained my situation. And the insurance company wasn't there. And the mediator decided in my favor. I won. And Gary was with me and we went home and we were jubilant. And then, a few weeks later, the insurance company decided they were going to, I forget the legal term for it, but they weren't accepting the decision, and they wanted to meet again in small claims court. I'm like, oh my God, how did that happen? They didn't show up, and now they want to meet me again? So we scheduled another date, and this time I copied the information from the New York business website, showing that the insurance company wasn't filing properly and they were actually in violation of New York law for operating in New York. And I brought all my paperwork, and we waited in line, and it was finally my turn. And sure enough, the insurance company didn't show up again. It was ruled in my favor, and the insurance company paid me. And fortunately, the medical provider accepted that, and I didn't know anymore. There are lots of different things that you can do. It's unfortunate that health insurance is not straightforward, but there are systems in place to help you. And while we're talking about insurance, I've been talking for the last few weeks about life insurance. I wanted to remind you that we are being sponsored. This show, It's All About Food, is sponsored by Health IQ. And what's wonderful about Health IQ is that they use science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people like runners, cyclists, strength trainers, and vegetarians and vegans. This is the way life should be. I think health insurance in general should give a discount. But right now, give a discount for people that live a healthy lifestyle. And maybe some do, I don't know. It's like car insurance does when you get a certification that you went to driver's training. You get a discount on driving insurance with some people, car insurance. Now, Health IQ, which is a life insurance company, is using this because they've realized that people who are healthier are better customers. You can go to Health IQ and see if you qualify and get your free quote. The website is healthiq.com/IAAF. Healthiq.com. IAAF. That's IAAF for It's All About Food. Okay, now there's a reason why I thought of talking about this subject today, getting health insurance claims covered and paid and tips to navigate the whole system, because I'm kind of going through something like it, like I experienced a decade ago with my dental insurance. All right, back in the end of December, I had root canal. And then I had lockjaw. That was fun. It only lasted about 3 weeks maximum. Happily, I am now okay. My jaw, my jaw goes up and down and it's functioning, no pain. And when we get back to New York, the end of February, I'll get my crown and the whole procedure will be done. Well, in November, I checked with my dental insurance company, and they told me I was covered for this procedure, which is why I signed up with this plan to begin with. I'm not really concerned about being covered for x-rays and teeth cleaning. Not that into that. I was interested in major procedures that were expensive and to be covered for some of that. And I was told I was covered. My dentist checked with the insurance company, and they said I was covered. I looked at the table of benefits numerous times, and it said I was covered. And then my dentist told me they denied the claim. And this happened after the procedure. And I thought to myself, oh no, I'm not going through this again. I went through this enough times, 10, 11 years ago. Please. And I've been on the phone numerous times with the insurance company. I have saved many files so that I have documentation. I have the names of all the representatives I've spoken with, the ones who have told me I'm covered. And then again today, they told me I wasn't covered. And it's crazy because I have one document that's an estimate of the procedure where they say how much they're going to pay. And then they have another document that says they're not paying. And what's interesting is the procedure happened in December, and the claim was for an estimate was filed in December before the procedure happened. But all of these documents are dated January 15th, January 17th, and February 7th. Okay? I checked on February 5th. And there was a document dated February 7th. So somehow my insurance company is operating in the future when they're filing documents. I'm not quite sure how they do that, but they're doing that, amongst other things. And all of these documents came after the major phone calls I had with them. So something is fishy, and I'm not giving up. So the first thing that I did after talking to the representatives numerous times and downloading everything and making screenshots and copies of everything, I went to the Department of Financial Services, dfs.ny.gov, and I filed my complaint. And I'm going to wait and see what I find out from them. It'll probably take 45 days or so. And if I don't hear back with a positive result, then I will move to the next step and go to small claims court. What do you think? If you have any particular stories or claims or incidents that you've had with health insurance companies and you want to share them with me, or maybe are looking for some advice on how to deal with it, you can contact me at info@realmeals.org. And I'll see if I have any advice or anything to recommend. You know, when you're ill and you're being treated, it can be scary. It can be uncomfortable. You can be financially challenged because maybe you're missing work. Or maybe your insurance doesn't cover everything. The out-of-pocket expense, the co-pays, whatever, can be especially large for you. You don't need that extra stress of how you're going to pay your bills. Many, many people go bankrupt. Many people lose their homes trying to pay their bills for medical procedures. This is wrong. This is wrong. And I was fortunate. I was fortunate because I had the skill set, the ability to do the analysis, the courage to fight. English is my language, my primary, my native tongue, and I think about people who might be in this country who don't speak English as well, and they can't communicate their problems, or maybe can't decipher the manual and the fine print. It can be very, very challenging, and I would like to think that our medical establishment can operate with more compassion. But we live in a capitalistic society where the bottom line is the bottom line. The bottom line is we need to make money. Every business needs to be profitable. And that's at the expense of just about everything. Okay, one more thing before I change the subject and talk about some more delicious, lighter topics. Lidocaine. Do you know about lidocaine? Lidocaine is one of these wonderful things that numbs an area so that you don't feel pain. And there's different ways to have lidocaine. When I was getting ready for chemotherapy and they would put these horrible needles in my upper chest to get into the vein, it was extremely painful. And I said, isn't there something you can do about this? And then they said, yes, lidocaine. So lidocaine can come in a cream where you apply it to your skin and that kind of numbs the skin. And then you can get a more serious version, which is an injection of lidocaine. And I would do both. I would put the cream on first to get my skin ready for the injection of lidocaine so I wouldn't feel that. And then it would numb the whole area before I would get the chemo infusion needles. But I'm telling you about this because if you're having a procedure where some discomfort is planned, you might ask in advance about lidocaine. For some reason, you have to ask for it. It's not just naturally offered. Now, maybe I'm more sensitive and I feel more things. I don't know, but I don't know why these things aren't offered up front. Do you? I was reminded about lidocaine when my dad was in the hospital back in November. And he had a catheter inserted to help with urination, and it was uncomfortable. And I kept telling the nurse, he's uncomfortable. Isn't there something you can do? And then somebody said, yeah, we can get some lidocaine. Lidocaine. But then it had to be approved. Someone had to fill out a piece of paper and go to the pharmacy in the hospital and pick it up and deliver it. And this took about 45 minutes to an hour. And it could have taken longer if I didn't start getting loud. But this was an unnecessary period of discomfort. So just remember, there's lidocaine. Okay, so we're here in the Bay Area, directing The Music Man. It goes up on Thursday, and we are doing a lot of eating in restaurants. More than I care to, actually, but our schedules are such that it's challenging, and where we're staying, it's challenging to prepare meals, and so we're eating out more. We tried a new restaurant called Luna. It's a Mexican restaurant. It is not vegan, but they have many vegan options, and it was fantastic. They have a cashew crema that they top their enchiladas with, which is a spiced, rich cashew cream. I think it has chipotle in it. It's just delicious. And here's a tip for you. We went to this restaurant specifically knowing that they had vegan options. People had recommended it. They also advertised that they use locally sourced foods, and it seemed like a place that supported sustainable food and then, of course, the vegan options, all good. And we went, finally, just the other day, and our waiter was a very nice guy. He was very friendly. He was trying to be humorous. But when I asked him about the vegan options, I saw the deer in headlights look in his eyes. And it was very clear to me that he didn't know anything about vegan, what it was, what it meant, or what they had. Now, their menu was pretty well labeled, but some things were confusing. I went to the front desk and explained that the server was very nice, but he didn't know enough to answer my questions, and they brought over Joe. Now, I don't know if Joe is the owner or the manager, but she was lovely and very knowledgeable, and she explained many of the dishes. A couple were vegan on the menu, but they weren't labeled as vegan, and we were able to try them. And we had a really wonderful time. I'm encouraged by restaurants like this one, especially when they have cashew cream. It's like they know what they're doing. It's not just like they're offering a pasta dish with vegetables or a green salad with vegetables. When they start adding menu items like cashew cream, it shows that they've dug deep, that they've researched, and they know about good cuisine when it comes to offering completely plant-based, non-animal options. It was good. And then another place that we have not been to yet is called the Crepe Bistro. It's in Santa Clara, and it offers vegetarian and vegan and gluten-free options, salads and crepes. And Gary's cousin's been telling us about the Crepe Bistro for a while, and we just haven't managed to get over there. But the other day, we were heading to rehearsal, and I was feeling hungry, and Gary wasn't. And he kept saying he would stop anywhere I wanted to pick something up for me, but I kept saying, no, I'll wait for after rehearsal. And then just before the rehearsal started, one of our cast members called me because it was her dad's birthday, and he's also in the cast. And she wanted to get him something for his birthday that everyone could eat. So she was getting some cupcakes, but she also wanted to get things that were vegan. And we have people that have nut allergies and people who have celiac and can't eat gluten. So she wanted to have different items so everyone would have something. And she was at the Crepe Bistro, and she knew that they made vegan and gluten-free crepes. And she wanted to get the sweet variety that had maple syrup. And it was made with buckwheat flour, potato starch, and rice flour. I just asked her, could you get me a savory crepe? And she did. And oh my, it was amazing. It had these wonderful grilled vegetables in it, a vegan pesto. And I can't wait to go back because this was a wonderful treat. We make crepes at home. We don't always make them savory, though, and I'm kind of inspired to do that now after having theirs, but we'll definitely have to go there again before we leave. You can have it all, and it can be delicious, and it can be vegan. buckwheat crepes, sweet or savory. You can find them at the Crepes Bistro in Santa Clara, California, or you can make them yourself. Like I said, we have a number of crepe recipes on the responsibleeatingandliving.com website. So you might check that out if you're salivating now and thinking about making some yummy vegan crepes that are also gluten-free. Okay, the last thing I wanted to talk about before we go, it's winter. And even though we're in California, we still get some of that winter feeling. The air is kind of dry and I get chapped lips. Do you? My skin gets dry, I get chapped lips. And it's always hard to find a chapstick that is vegan and good. And I'm using one right now. I just wanted to let you know about it. It's called Max Green Alchemy. It's free of beeswax. It's vegan. It's petrochemical free. It's organic. I have the peppermint tea tree flavor, and I really like it. It can be found at maxgreenalchemy.com. It's made in San Francisco. And there you have it. It's keeping me comfortable, which is really important. If you have any vegan products that you've recently discovered that you've fallen in love with, I would love to hear about them. Again, you can contact me at info@realmeals.org. Thanks again for sharing another hour with me, listening to It's All About Food. Even though today wasn't exactly all about food, it was connected to food because everything is connected to food. I hope you found it useful. And again, if you have any comments or questions, you know where you can reach me. Also, check out responsibleeatingandliving.com. That's my nonprofit website where we live and put up our recipes and our daily blog, What Vegans Eat, and also archive all of the shows on this program that we get transcribed by volunteers. Thanks for listening and have a delicious week. Thank you.